Make Me Smart is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Yeah, Charlton's like, okay, I got to let them know what's going on because they're just rambling like, now. What's going to happen when I start the music? He's like, I don't know. He's like, I've been on vacation or out for a while.
Are you going to do the show or just keep talking?
We'll go. He started the music. We gotta go. Hey, everybody, I'm Kyle Rizdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. None of us is as smart as all of us is the buzzword. One of, frankly, many buzz phrases of this podcast, depending on what the producers write for us to say.
I mean, honestly, yeah. It is one of the best parts of this podcast. How it just keeps spawning taglines. It's just like a tagline machine. I'm Molly Wood. Thanks for joining us. If you are new to our podcast and a little bit confused, it's okay. We just like to ease you in. Here's what's happening. Yeah. It's What Do You Want to Know Wednesday, which is an entire episode dedicated to generating taglines and answering your questions. Okay, maybe not the tagline thing. Ideally, we'll just answer your questions, but you never know when one's going to pop up.
That's right. So the world's best news story of the past 10 days, 2 weeks is now over. The ship, of course, has refloated, but we got a question about it. Here comes.
Hey, Molly and Kai. This is Aaron from Mariester, Florida. When we're talking about the almost $10 billion per day cost associated with the blockage.
Yeah, buddy.
Who is actually incurring that cost? I imagine it's not just one entity. And will we actually be able to itemize and understand who took the burden of that cost at the end of the day? Thank you.
Such a good question. Such
I know.
A good question.
And we yeah, do just bandy it. About these numbers, and it's sort of this like generalized floating $10 billion or something.
That's right. So or something. So the deal is this. Lloyd's List, which is, you know, maintains sort of master shipping inventories, and there was Lloyd's of London and insurance and all of that. They came out the day maybe the ship got stuck, maybe a day later, and said the way we figure it based on our understanding of inventories of ships passing through the canal is that northbound traffic is like $5 billion a day, and southbound traffic is $4 billion a day. And so they said, okay, plus or minus $10 billion a day is being lost to global trade or is being hung up. The catch is that we're not going to be able to figure out the costs of all that until what's in the ships gets to the final destination. So if you are waiting for a refrigerator in Munich and it happened to be on that ship or one of the ships that was stuck, your ship has to get to Rotterdam. It's got to be broken out of the container. It's got to get to the warehouse. It's got to be put on a train. It's got to get to the wholesaler distribution point. Then it's got to get to the retailer. And then it's got to get to the delivery thing. And your refrigerator is 3 weeks late. And there's some costs involved in that. But aggregating all that is going to be really, really tricky just in terms of figuring out who's going to bear all the costs. So it's going
to
be a while.
And it feels like that aggregation is somewhat unlikely to occur. Like, I don't know that anybody's going to track down all those individual items unless there start to be lawsuits, which there could be. Right. Like they're looking at what actually did happen. It's funny because I talked to my dad today and my dad was like, hey, I know you like to be a big know-it-all on your podcast. And so what I was wondering is how in God's name do you explain to me the fact that a ship the size of the Empire State Building can get blown over by the wind?
Right.
And I was like,
Dad,
you make an excellent point.
Yeah.
So apparently there's a big story in The Guardian about how long it's going to take to sort out what happened there were, in fact, mechanical or human error, what those lawsuits look like. And then meanwhile, apparently the Suez Canal Authority is a fancy toll booth and said it lost up to $15 million in revenue a day because of the blockage and what are essentially toll fees. So the costs are distributed.
Yeah, and here's why that matters. Yeah. Here's why the whole thing about the Suez Canal Authority matters, right? And so the day this happened, I was on my regular morning call with Nancy Fergali, the executive producer of Marketplace, who is proudly and loudly Egyptian. And she said that money that they get from the Suez Canal Authority is some huge proportion of the actual hard currency that Egypt gets. And that's going to be a big issue for them. So this plays out like on, it plays out on like 19 different levels. So it's really interesting. Also, just parenthetically, fun and games department, CNN Interactive had a game yesterday, I guess it came out, maybe the other day, about, it's a simulation of you try to steer this ship through the Suez Canal. And let me just tell you, don't try it on deadline when you're on your radio show, because you will crash the show or you'll crash the ship. I crashed the ship. But it's super cool. And Tony will put it in the show page give it a shot. Fergali, by the way, Nancy Fergali, the EP of Marketplace, she says she got it first time and it's because she's Egyptian. I don't believe her.
Oh, really? Big show off.
I don't believe her. Yeah, I don't.
Those ships are unsteerable. That was the whole point of our little rant on Monday, I think, is they're too big to sail. All right, let's keep it rolling. Our next question comes today from Joe in North Carolina.
I just heard about Archegos Capital, which is a hedge fund that apparently just collapsed. And I'm worried that this might be the first domino in a long trail of dominoes. I have no idea what's going on with it and how worried I should be. Could you help make me smart about that?
Yeah.
That is so awesome. Yeah. And it's such a 2020 mindset of you, buddy, to be like, is this it? Is this the beginning of the global financial collapse? It's got to be, right? That seems reasonable.
Right.
Yeah. I hear you. We are all worried about these things. Okay. Also, I'm obsessed with this story because this is just one of those, like, this is one of those moments where that Kai was talking about the other day when he's like, I'm into my list of things, and then your list of things is never ending, which is true. I'm obsessed with family offices. I think they are so interesting because family offices is a bland little name for what is increasingly like big time investment firms that manage family wealth. So when you're talking about the 1% and the 0.001% and whatever, there's still a lot of them, and they have so much money that they literally create firms just to manage their own money, in case you didn't know. Now you know. And they don't have to register with the SEC. They're like an increasingly ever given size loophole in the SEC because they have tons of money that they invest in all these different ways. They're big movers in venture capital. And I say all of this because that is what Archegos Capital is. It, a U.S. investment firm that is basically a family office and got in out way over its skis, shall we say.
Right.
Collapsed. Right. It defaulted on its margin calls, like basically just didn't have enough money to cover its investments. And then that lost a bunch of money for a bunch of big banks. And now there's all these questions about maybe we should pay attention to family offices because they're investing like millions and hundreds of millions of dollars, so much so that they can impact. Yeah. What were the banks? It was like Credit Suisse.
Oh, Citi was there.
I think.
JP Morgan was there. I mean, Credit Suisse. A lot of them. Yeah, a lot of them.
Yeah, Nomura, which is a big broker, announced that they had faced losses that could be, quote, highly significant for the banks.
Yep.
I just think this is so interesting.
It is so interesting. The thing you need to know, right, other than margin calls and family office and all of this, is that there are still shadowy things happening in high finance. There's leverage. There are swaps. There are all of these things that we all became so familiar with in 2007, 8, and 9 that caused so much disruption. This is way smaller than that, right? This is not a systemic issue, but there are still shadowy things happening that can cause, billions of dollars worth of losses. And so, I mean, my quick take on this is, yes, big deal, not systemic. Everybody needs to listen to Marketplace and this podcast so that you can understand what's going on out there. Because, well, that's what happened in 2007, right? There was securitization and swaps and collateralized debt obligations and all this stuff. And they brought the global economy to its knees and nobody understood. It's still happening. It's still happening.
And this is, by the way, just to be super specific, banks are facing billions of dollars in losses. Apparently, Archegos Capital managed several billions of dollars in assets. So definitely significant. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, look, something Jay Powell goes here about nobody's falling apart right now. But but it's a big deal. And yeah. Absolutely should not be a several billion dollar size loophole in, you know, SEC right. oversight. It's not to say that these are right. amateurs. Right. Obviously, like, very experienced investors run these family offices, and very experienced investors have run our economy into the ground before. So, like, yes, close that loophole.
Right. Right.
And listen to our shows. Yeah.
And listen to our shows. There we go.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. What's
so
next?
That was that one. So we did a thing on modern monetary theory last year. And oh, look, here's a question on modern monetary theory, MMT. Here we go.
Hi, Molly and Kai. This is Carolyn in Connecticut. And I was wondering if you'd be willing to discuss the new $1.9 trillion spending bill, specifically in the areas of potential inflation and national
drink.
Debt. What would MMT say about how this is all going down and how it might all wind up or turn out? And I don't know if it has anything to do with this, but it'd be really cool if it does. You got to
the
know
best part was,
when to hold 'em.
Oh my God, there's a song.
Nowhere
oh my
to hold
'em. Oh my goodness.
Know when to walk away.
Walk away.
Know when to run. When you run. Never count your money. When you're sitting at the table, there'll be
oh
time
God.
Enough for counting.
Wow.
Is she just slapping that guitar? I love this.
Done. Oh my Lord, right?
Bravo.
Oh my Lord. Oh my Lord. That was amazing. That was great.
Is it kind of like that? What a stinker. I love her. Oh my God.
Carolyn, you're like my favorite listener ever. Ever, ever, ever.
That was incredible.
Holy cow.
And you got a little sing-along. It worked.
I did a little. I did a little. You know, and I'm stone cold sober, too. So how about that? Okay. So super quick. Modern monetary theory says, of which Stephanie Kelton, who we've had on the podcast before, she is the most high profile proponent of modern monetary theory. It basically says governments that control their own currency, which is to say, Jay Powell, using that special printing press, can crank out as much money. He can make the money machine go brrr, right? We can never default on our debts. We can spend as much money as we want to fulfill all the deficits that Kelton and others think we have in this economy, like healthcare, education, infrastructure. We can spend all that money without risk of inflation because we control our own currency, and also the Congress can then, if they need to, tax that money back out of circulation. It's kind of high concept. It's really interesting. Kelton has said on the record a couple of times, you know, this is not a bad experiment in modern monetary theory. And I wonder what she would say now, actually, on the whole American Rescue, not the rescue plan, the infrastructure bill that Biden released today, too, because that's going to be like $2.2-something trillion, only part of which will be paid for with tax increases. So, yeah, it definitely applies. And it is kind of a real life experiment. And it'll be interesting to see what happens with inflation. Drink.
Just drink every time you hear inflation at this point.
Yeah.
I do think that you are absolutely right that the infrastructure proposal is the closest thing we will see to modern monetary theory in our lifestyle in our lifetimes because it is the idea, of course, is not just that you create money to pay off your debts, but it's that you create money to fund money creating activities. And that's why this infrastructure bill, which is, you know, billed as all about jobs, and in theory, absolutely should be, right? If you're going to build bridges, people need to build them.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to build broadband infrastructure, people need to build them. And then people have broadband internet and they can use that for jobs and so on and so forth.
Yep.
And that is what makes this such a specific potential. Obviously, it's nowhere near passing yet, but potential experiment. So, yes. Good song also.
Yeah.
Good singing.
Good song, great
so
question.
Great. Oh my goodness, I love it. Should we hit our last question or
let's
why
go.
Not?
Come on.
It's our show. We can do whatever we want. Spring is here in at least my town and I think Kai's town, typically known as home buying season, and all we ever talk about is housing. Here's a question from Janet in Massachusetts.
I'm calling today about the housing market. So I live in the Berkshires, which is Western Massachusetts, and mm-hmm. we are experiencing a housing crisis because so many people from New York City have decided to leave the city and buy homes here that they have driven up the market nearly 100%, making it almost impossible for those of us who live and have worked here earning modest wages to be able to afford a new home. I'm wondering if this is something that's happening across the country, and I'm just wondering how long this might last. So please make me smarter and help us so that my husband and I can afford a house. Thanks. Bye.
Yeah. So look, oh, man. It totally is happening across the country, right? And I'll just give you two little tidbits of information. So this is not the Berkshires, right? It's the most recent Case-Shiller Home Price Index. It's kind of the benchmark. It came out yesterday, and it said for the year ended in January, home prices were up 11%, the biggest jump in 15 years. So that's item number one. And item number two is the cause of that, and this is from the National Association of Realtors. At the end of January, there were 1.04 million homes for sale in the United States. That is down 26% from a year earlier, lowest on record, going back to 1982. The problem is home supply, right? There are not enough homes for all the people who want to buy them. And you do the whole supply-demand thing, and boom, prices go up. And that's what's going on.
Yeah. Why do we think, I know we don't have any time left, but why is there no supply? People aren't moving because of the pandemic, maybe, or they can't, probably because they can't afford a new home. We might be in a nightmare trough right now where no one's leaving because they can't make enough on their house to buy a new house because house prices are so up. So at some point, some of that equilibrium will have to break. And
I think that's
exactly
right. And in the meantime,
I'm so sorry.
Right. And so, one of the really good parts I talk about the 10-year treasury note a lot on the show. One of the good parts for home buyers of the 10-year going up is that mortgages in the United States are closely tied to the yield on the U.S. 10-year treasury, right? And with the yield on the treasury going up, that means mortgage rates are going to be going up. And in fact, they have in the last 6 to 8 weeks from truly like historic lows, like 2-point-something%, which is bananas. But as those interest rates go up, that will affect home prices, because what's the key factor in a home price? It's your monthly nut, right? How much you can pay every single month. And part of that is the interest you have on your mortgage. And if interest rates go up, your nut is going to be affected because you're not going to be able to carry that much debt. And so home prices will, in theory, come down. And that's the promising part of rates going up.
So wait. You're saying that there was like low interest rates and so a lot of free money in the market, and then there was this thing that people wanted to buy, and then because a lot of people wanted to buy it and they had money, then the prices went up, and then we could use interest rates to bring it down? You can hear me drinking that was inflation. In case you are not clear on the concept.
Residential inflation is a real thing, but home prices are a little bit separate because they're kind of a different animal because of the how truly expensive they are, right? But that's one of the side effects of rates going up. And I don't know that Jay Powell is specifically thinking of home prices, but real estate is one of the asset classes that he bears in mind when he thinks about the overall state of this economy and what people are able to do. Because as we know, just to go way down this rabbit hole, real estate and home ownership is the primary way that Americans build wealth. Right? You buy a house, you hang on to it for 20 years, and you're way in the money. And it is also, to go farther down the rabbit hole, one of the key reasons of the racial wealth gap in this economy, right? Because black people, when they buy homes, they don't buy in neighborhoods that appreciate as fast. They can't put as much money in or down. I mean, there's a whole lot of things that go on with it. But sorry, sermon over.
Anyway,
that's it.
No, housing, it's very central. And it is concerning that people are in this place where they either can't leave or can't buy. And it will at some point have to be fixed. Also, I propose a new drinking game, and that new drinking game is every time Jay Powell comes up on this podcast. Okay, time to go. That's it. That's it for What Do You Want to Know Wednesday.
Totally fair.
All right.
Totally fair.
We're done.
Oh, my goodness. We are done. Programming note for y'all. We mentioned it yesterday. Real quick, next week, Kimberly Adams is in with Megan McCarty-Carino. She does the workplace for us. So if you have a question for either one of them, come Wednesday next. Let us know. Emails and voice memos, makemesmart@marketplace.org. Hosts are off, undisconnected, and out of the loop.
Listen to those shows, though, because that's a fun team.
Yeah, it is good.
Kimberly and Megan. I'm excited.
I think Friday might be good, honestly.
Yes, definitely. Make Me Smart is produced and directed by our fun team, Marissa Cabrera, Tony Wagner, our digital producer, Erica Phillips, who writes our newsletters and our Make Me Smart explainers.
Charlton Thorpe engineered today. Oh, man, we are over time. We've been at 3 minutes. Ben Talladay and Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music. Donna Tam is the senior producer of this year's podcast, the executive director of On Demand, who's probably not listening because she is on vacation, is Satara Nieves.
Spring break season. I must be feeling the spring break vibe because I actually responded to a tweet today about Peeps and have been having a fun time conversing with people on Twitter. I'm sure this train is going to come to an end almost immediately, but right now, it's going great.
Yes.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.